Hello, this is Shireen Gourbani, and we are here with a special holiday version of Both Sides of the Aisle, where I am so honored to be joined by my friend and also the district attorney for Salt Lake County, Sim Gill. Sim, thank you for joining me.
It's a pleasure to be here. I'm really excited.
Okay, so I have a number of questions that I want to get to about the role of the district attorney, about crime and punishment in our county, some of your thoughts on what we're seeing statewide. But I'd love to start with just asking, like, who are you? Tell me a little bit about your background.
Well, I'm a Utah native in the sense that my family grew up here. I grew up in Kearns High School, went to Valley Junior High School, out in the Granger-Kearns area, went to Kearns High School. Then subsequently went up to the University of Utah, where I got a dual major in history and philosophy.
Yeah.
Then went away to law school in Portland, Oregon, and then came back here and have been a public prosecutor in my entire professional life, which is coming on almost 30 years.
Incredible. Okay, so now tell me a little bit about the turn into politics. When did you first decide to run? Like, what happened?
Yeah, you know, I had been prosecuting. I was the chief city prosecutor for Salt Lake. I ran in 2005 in a close election, lost, but ran again in 2010. And because I wanted to make a difference, I wanted to change our institution and address the issue of crime and public safety with data-driven issues. And so that idea motivated me. I was a career prosecutor, and I was lucky enough to get elected as district attorney in 2010 and started in January of 2011.
Okay, so can you just, for our listeners, does everybody have their own district attorney?
No, every county has a county attorney. Mm-hmm. District attorney is a title that's only used in Salt Lake County, mm-hmm. but in all the rest of the counties in the state, there are elected county attorneys.
And now is that because this is a county of the first class?
Yes, it is a county of the first class, and that was the title that they gave to this office, so hence I'm the district attorney.
So what in general does this role do across our counties? And I know we're going to talk about yours because it's a little different.
Yeah.
Just given the complexity and size of this county. But what does the district attorney do? What does a county attorney do?
Right. So what they do is they look at all major crime that happens in the boundaries of the county. So anything from a Class A level offense to capital homicide. So Class A offenses are punishable by up to a year in jail.
Give me an example of a Class A offense.
Well, a protective order violation.
Okay.
The first protective order violation might be a Class A misdemeanor.
Okay. So real quick, a protective order. Yeah. I know a little bit about this from when I was doing crisis line work in domestic violence. So somebody is in a situation that's dangerous with their partner. They can approach
the court.
They typically approach the court.
Yep.
And then through that, they're given a protective order that rules that that person can't be around them.
That's right.
So that's what we're talking about at the kind of basic
level. That's right. That is right.
Okay. And then all the way up to
capital homicide.
Yeah.
So all serious crime in your community is prosecuted by the district attorney's office. And the other thing that people may not realize, we're also civil legal counsel for Salt Lake County government, which is a $2 billion corporation, and we're the in-house legal counsel, so we litigate in behalf of Salt Lake County government,
sure.
We defend it, we oversee contracts and procurement, so it's playing those both roles, which is a civil attorney, but also the prosecutor in charge of all major crime within in the county.
Yeah. So do you sometimes get envious of the other county attorneys and perhaps the level of complexity you have to deal with being different, but they have similar things, I think, when it comes to thinking about contracts or defending the county itself. And certainly we've seen counties in the news for all sorts of reasons.
Yeah.
And those often involve intersections with our criminal legal system or you know, thinking about the ways in which we're conducting ourselves appropriately or inappropriately.
Right.
But the crime side of it is different in this county.
Yeah.
Talk about what you've noticed over your time. So from 2011 to now, over 20 years, what are some of the changes that you've noticed in the kinds of crime that you're seeing in your office?
Sure. Well, one thing to your earlier point, Salt Lake County is unique. Nobody has the kind of caseload that we do in volume. We will screen some 18,000 cases, file on some 14,000 cases. So in that sense, I'm sometimes envious because we have the lion's share of the work.
Yeah.
And the complexity of the work, the sophistication of the work, and the numbers of those sophistications are unique to us. As to your second question, over the years, one of the things that I have noticed, which is one of those issues, issues, that we have a lot of mental health issues. We have a lot of substance abuse issues. We have a lot of recognition of trauma. But we also have great research that tells us how this intersection of this behavior is coming into the criminal justice system.
Yeah.
And sometimes unfairly and disproportionately.
Yeah.
Because we're not addressing the issue of mental illness in our community, then by default, our criminal justice system has become the care provider.
Right.
Because we're not giving access to treatment in the community as readily available. We see the collateral consequences of addictive behavior that manifests itself as crimes, and we are providing treatment in that in those areas.
Right.
And simultaneously...
Well, let's head on that for a second. So when we're talking about the changes, are you suggesting that there's an intensification? We're seeing more folks dealing with mental illness? We're seeing more folks dealing with addiction?
I think there has been a steady growth of that in terms of volume and this coming through the criminal justice system. And for Salt Lake County, because we have the largest infrastructure of social services, we unfortunately sometimes see people from other counties coming in here or migrating here because they have access to those resources.
So let's just give an example of that, right? So when I think about that, I think about so I do some volunteer work in the homelessness space, right? And I don't want to get too deep into that because I think the complexities there are a little different than the broader challenges that you face, which I'd love to focus on more today. But when we think about homelessness and we think about folks that are on the street, the amount of people who are dealing with serious mental illness we know is very high. We also know that chances are if you're in Davis County, maybe you have access to treatment, maybe you have access to care. If you are one county outside of that, actually Weber probably has some too, but like I'm thinking about Box Elder, I'm thinking about Cache, I'm thinking about you're out in these other counties, the likelihood that you're going to encounter somebody that has any sense of what they can do to get you linked up with mental health care or into a treatment program, just given the lack of infrastructure that we have across our rural areas or more rural areas for the kind of intense treatment that people need, does mean that we see, I think, more people kind of gravitate towards the city, often because this is where we have the social services. So when you mention that, I want to put in people's heads what we're talking about. We're talking about structures or places like St. Finney's, where folks who are on the street may be able to go. We are talking about huge representation in clinics that accept Medicaid. So clinics that can provide mental health care or addiction treatment services that will also help get people enrolled in Medicaid who they likely qualify. But to have the infrastructure to enroll somebody, I don't know what Box Elder has for that, right? Like these other counties don't have.
Absolutely. And also the growth that we have, the public transportation system we have.
The shelters.
The shelters that we have. So if you are homeless and you are trying to survive, or if you're homeless and mentally ill and don't have access to treatment and you're self-medicating, your chances of survival are going to be greater in the highly urbanized community, including like Salt Lake County and Salt Lake City.
Yeah.
And then by default, those services are the infrastructure out of need are built here as well, which is a catch-22 because then that's also the attractant that brings people here as well because they can have access to those services.
Right.
So the more we try to deal with it, the more we provide, the more other people are more likely to come here.
So we'll get into that more in the second half of the show, but I want to talk a little bit more about what you've seen change. Certainly, I think about even just the way the internet has changed from, you know, when first started to now. Certainly crimes associated there. What are some of the other things that you've noticed?
Well, the other thing that we've noticed is that the volume is there as a result of that growth that we have. But also the drug communication between I-80 and I-15 are also here. We've seen a demographic shift that's occurring. One of the emerging thing that I'm concerned about is the proliferation of guns and the number of cars that are left unattended. I'm concerned about gang violence because we are no longer a sleepy little town in the Mountain West, and we have more sophistication that's occurring. It's not necessarily more gang crime is happening, but the intensity of violence with easy access to guns is raising the bar up on the kind of crime that's occurring, which is more violent with more injuries. So those are the growing pains, not economically also, but also within the realm of criminal justice.
Sure.
So that is going to continue to grow. And just like we think about traffic patterns and growth, we have to also invest in our criminal justice system in the same fashion with these demographic shifts.
Totally agree. Okay, so but then there are some interesting things that you've mentioned or brought up just there, the proliferation of guns.
Yeah.
So you're a Democrat, I'm a Democrat, I think sometimes, mostly these days. Yeah. But I would say the thing that I'm heartbroken about, and I think I would love for us to see less division on partisanship and more just honest conversation, is about the impact of guns. And, you know, in our I think in our community broadly, when we think about Utah generally, we know that one of the greatest impacts of gun violence is suicide. So people ending their own lives because of easy access to guns. The thing that broke my heart last year was seeing how many children were picking up guns that were loaded, that were not kept safe, and killing themselves. And I do believe that it was something like 42 children last year. And I think that was the statewide number, but I'll correct myself on the later show if I was wrong. But when you think about the number of lives lost just from careless gun storage, you know, that's heartbreaking to me. But it really has to do with this proliferation, easy access to weapons. And I'm also really concerned about the role that it plays in domestic violence. We know that it's more dangerous to folks who are in domestic violence situations if a partner has a gun in the house, the increasing likelihood that they could be killed by that partner, again, because of ease of access. Are you noticing trends or concerns kind of on that familial side as well?
Yeah, I am. I mean, the volume of guns that are there, I want to be very clear. This is not a Second Amendment issue.
No.
This is a public safety issue. So I've used the opportunity when I've had press conferences to talk about proper storage. And so you see it in intimate partner violence. You see it in gang violence. You see it in strong arm robberies. It is the easy access to gun and the wrong storage without safety. Storage, right? I've said, don't leave your guns in your car.
Yeah.
If you have guns at home, please safely secure them. And we've had weapons stolen and then out of cars that are left unattended,
unlocked,
and then they end up in subsequent crimes, which they end up killing or injuring people.
So I'm going to leave this segment with the biggest safety tip that I feel like people can have in their own homes, which is store your guns safely.
Absolutely.
Store your guns safely. So this is Shireen Gourbani, and you are listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I am with Salt Lake County District Attorney Sim Gill, and we'll be back right after the break. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on Utah Public Radio. We love to hear from listeners like you. If you would like to send us a comment, email bsotapodcast@gmail.com. That's bsotapodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. This is Shireen Gourbani, and you are listening to a special edition of Both Sides of the Aisle, where I have with me our Salt Lake County District Attorney, Sim Gill, to talk a little bit about trends in crime. We spent the first half talking about just the things he's seen over his years in office, starting in 2011 to now, but then also just a little bit about his background. But now I want to get into, Sim, some of the bigger issues that are at hand. So let me just start by asking you this question. Crime? Up or down in Salt Lake County?
Crime is down, not only in Salt Lake County, but across the nation as well, overall. But the rhetoric is up.
That's right. That's right. Okay. So we know that there, and I should say that there are, you know, there's lots of crime.
Yeah.
Lots of different categories of crime. And so when we think about things going up or down, we think in general, the homicide rate in our country is down.
Yeah.
We can think about other kinds of crime, domestic violence, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Not wildly dramatically, okay.
Yeah, and sexual assault is always there. And I think we need to recognize to the person who is the victim, it's real and tangible.
Yes.
But as part of a broader conversation, crime is not rampant in the way that our rhetoric is up there, you know, sort of exploiting that rhetoric to say that it's up in that sense. It's not.
It's not.
It's not.
No. So, but one of the things that we do know from data that's collected annually in Salt Lake County, I know better, is that homelessness, though, is up.
Yeah, it is.
And I think that there's a really terrible conflation of homelessness and crime. There are elements of, you know, I think, public safety that feel threatened. But I'll tell you from my perspective as a downtown Salt Laker, I live right on the edge of downtown and often am out at night. I love going to movies. I like going out to restaurants and bars and walk home. And I feel safe.
Yeah.
I feel safe in downtown Salt Lake City. I also am a runner. And so I run through the hills. I run on the Jordan River Trail. I run around and I feel safe in this community. I'm really frustrated by the rhetoric out of our legislature about how unsafe our community is when, honestly, I don't often see them interfacing directly with folks that do live on our streets. And I also don't really see them often in their communities ponying up the kind of resources that are needed to address the broader problems that we have that may drive people to be homeless,
right.
But then also to live on our streets, right? So we talked a little bit about the consolidation of services, but we don't have to get too deep into that. I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about what are the challenges that you experience when it comes to addressing? So we hear this rhetoric from our state government, from I think some business owners, some prominent voices that say Salt Lake City, Salt Lake County is not doing enough to address crime. Tell me your reaction to that.
I think, look, the general concern about crime is something we will always have. I think that what we need to recognize that the specific crime is being prosecuted by our office, by responded to by law enforcement. And I think what happens is that they, within our visual horizon, we see people who are homeless. We see those individuals who may be suffering mental health issues. And that discomfort is our sort of emotional experience with the lack of safety.
Yeah.
So you know, I think that is...
Yeah, how do you think they feel?
Yeah, right?
And
so,
go on. Yeah.
And so we recognize that. Now, the infrastructure to support and to address those issues if we want to make long-term gains is a balanced approach. Yes, when crime happens, we need to respond to it, and it's very real to people, but we also want to make the kind of infrastructure support so we can transition people out of the homelessness. We can get them access to mental health services. We can get them access to shelter spaces, if you will.
Yeah.
But it's those lack of those resources what brings people into the visual horizon.
Right.
But so, and particular incidents are not crime waves.
Right.
Those are incidents that happen in every community. And so, yes, we should be vigilant about responding when those incidents happen.
Mm-hmm.
Our office does that. Nobody does the volume that we do. But we also can be thoughtful in the way recognizing what some of the underlying drivers are.
Yeah.
So we can take a balanced approach to it and not be held hostage by one narrative against the other
narrative. So I do want to talk about resources, though, because this was something that I thought was frustrating when I was on the county council, because I think we all hold positions that are sometimes in conflict. I'm distressed by how much we spend on public safety, for example, out of the county budget.
Yeah.
But I also believe that it should be high quality and people should be paid to do what is often an impossible job.
Yes.
So we need to appropriately resource. But I would like for us to be thinking about broader ways that we're reducing crime kind of in the big picture. But do you believe that you have the resources that you need to appropriately address what's coming your way?
No, I think, look, I've said this for years. The way our community wants us to address these issues require an investment in time. But it also requires the resources to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So I have never been fully funded for the number of bodies that I need to be able to do my job, and also to make sure that we do it in a way that this is we can recruit people to do that. Now, we've made some gains in that, but the raw numbers have not changed. I have the same number of prosecutors that I had in 2019 when I was saying we need more resources.
And our population, to be clear, has grown
slightly.
a bit in that time.
Yeah. Yeah.
And certainly quite actually exponentially since you first entered office.
And we didn't have enough resources then, right? And so that's just the one way to look at it. And if we're going to, and we need to make investment in our law enforcement. We need to pay them the right kind of salaries and ask and more from them, right? Because we need to make those institutional investments. Now, what happens is, in a public system, we give the minimum, but we want the maximum in return, and then we're overwhelmed by the workload that's there.
Right.
So we have to strike that balance from our, whether it's law enforcement, whether it's prosecution, whether it's the court, and then whether it's the social services.
Right.
We need to make strategic investments and listen to those stakeholders and when they cry out for resources so we can have the kind of return on investment that we want to have.
Well, what do we do to reduce crime?
What we do is we make investments.
Yeah.
Well, we make investments, thoughtful, strategic investments in law enforcement, in prosecution, in social services, in transitional housing, in affordable housing, in mental health services. It doesn't mean that we turn a blind eye to crime, but we don't conflate it with that. Now,
and I want to slow you down.
Yeah.
Conflate it.
Yeah.
What are we talking about?
So there's a perception that every homeless person is a criminal.
Right.
They're not.
Right.
There are economic homelessness, situational homelessness, episodic homelessness, and then severe and persistent homelessness.
Yeah. And yeah. I'll give another example. Yeah. People who are perhaps dangerously mentally ill are not necessarily criminals, right? Yeah. And I remember the first time I toured the Salt Lake County Jail, you know, standing there with one of the deputy jail directors and just saying, you know, why are these folks here?
Yeah.
And he just said, that's a problem, honest, like in not a way that he didn't care, but he just was like, that's above my pay grade. Yeah. These folks shouldn't be here.
Yeah.
But we have, as a society, you know, when you talk about investments, we have disinvested in structures over time that can create safety nets and places, safe places for people to be when they do not have somewhere else to go. They don't have the family to take care of them. And I think about just like the emptying out of certainly mental institutions were not good places to be. But is there a different version of that where people who need severe mental health?
So I'm going to say something, which I think your audience will completely understand. When I say civil commitment, majority of the people who hear that think that that's a place. In the state of Utah, civil commitment is a status. It is not a place.
Yeah.
When we civilly commit somebody, we don't have a place to take somebody to. And so there is a lack of that. So when we don't have a place to take them to and we don't provide the other services, then they are out on the street.
Yeah.
So civil commitment is a status.
Yeah.
And we need to make it into a place. Where people can have access to those resources. So you can't ignore that. And then there is that secondary group, which is predatory of the homeless.
Yes.
So who intermingle in there and sell drugs and exploit that anonymity. And so there's that part of it. So it's a nuanced and very complex issue.
Yeah.
But you cannot simply conflate it as easily to say that homelessness equates criminality.
Right.
It does not.
Or the mental illness.
So here's another way I would say it. Our societal neglect equals criminality sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
And that's a much more stronger connection than just homelessness equates criminality.
Yeah. So when you talk about investments, you know, and I think rightly, because this is your job, you're focused on things like, you know, what we have in terms of support in our legal system, in our police forces, the kinds of trainings and resources and things that they have access to. And I do want to talk, because I think Salt Lake County has some innovative things that they've done that you've let out on. I'd like to talk about some of those. But I also think about things like investments in parks, in after school programs, in programs, you know, junior jazz, like all of it. I think all of those kinds of programs, when we think about food security, all of the ways that we can disrupt adverse childhood effects. So those things that happen in early childhood for children that are deeply impactful in terms of what happens to them in their longer range of life. I think it's hard for people to really wrap their brains around. I get criticized sometimes from listeners, though I love you, keep sending in the emails. I don't mind. I have thick skin. But about, you know, wanting all of these social safety nets, wanting all of these social programs. But what I think is I would like to see a long-term investment that creates a more peaceful, a more civil, and more engaged society.
Absolutely.
And the kinds of investments that we have to do that are massive.
There's data that shows that child neglect is a co-equal contributor to substance-criminogenic issues as childhood abuse.
Yes.
And neglect is failure to thrive, failure to have access to a shelter, right? So those are really, really relevant. The other thing that we're exploring with research, working with other nonprofits, is childhood trauma and the intergenerational passage of trauma and the subsequent manifestation and criminal behavior.
Sure.
And so how do we disrupt that? How do we make families thrive? I think in Utah, of all places, we're committed to the success of families, and we want to create the infrastructure of that success. And I think the point here all is that there are no easy answers, and the investment of time that is necessary in infrastructure building, there is sometimes the lack of political will to follow through on it.
Sure. Tell me some of the exciting programs or some of the innovative things that Salt Lake County's done to, I would say, actually divert people out of our criminal legal system.
Sure. One of my proudest moments was to help create the first mental health court in the state of Utah. We have veterans court. We have drug courts. We have Camp Hope, where we work with children whose cases we prosecuted to help them get out of trauma. And we make a 3-year commitment to that. We have pre-filing diversion. That is that people are held accountable, but they're given the help that they need. And then we don't let them enter into the criminal justice system, which actually is a good dollar-for-dollar return on investment. We're working on the impact of trauma and criminogenic behavior and doing some research into that area. So all of these different kind of programmings and innovative interventions are there while still keeping our community safe. So we don't compromise on public safety, but we also use data and research to get a better return on investment and outcomes
as well. The hours you spend. If you were like, man, I got a magic wand or endless resources, one thing that you could do to address, I think, some of the real pain in our society, what would you do?
Well, I would look at trauma intervention at the junior high and elementary level and high school level.
Yeah.
Because I promise you, the research is compelling that unresolved trauma finds itself later. So we are exploring that part of it. I would make sure that communities and children are safe and they can thrive, because failure to thrive and neglect is engages directly into criminal behavior.
Yeah.
So I want to look at that. I want to also be able to find affordable housing for those people that I do prosecute.
So you've got lots of big ideas.
Yeah, so they come in. Look,
that's true.
Listen, less than 1% of people are going to be permanently in jail. They're going to be coming into our community.
Yeah. So I love some of these big ideas, and I'm so grateful that you spent this time with me. And I just want to reiterate for folks, as much as you hear about crime in our community, crime in Salt Lake County, crime in Salt Lake City is down. So please, you know, take care of yourself this holiday season. Take care of those around you. Thank you so much for your service
to
this county. Thanks for being with us. This is Shireen Gourbani, and you've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle.